that self-judgment that just completely just tears us apart. We just crumble inside. And by the time you get to your 40s and 50s, you've been doing it for so long, it actually starts to win. And then that's where you start feeling like you've been robbed of your life.
Welcome to Loving the Eth. I'm Melissa Allison, and this is the podcast that looks at the forbidden and says, hey, baby. I talk to a new guest each week and examine the female, finances, friends, family, fitness, and all the other F words. So join me, especially if it's forbidden.
Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of Loving the Eth, the podcast that redefines the forbidden. I'm your host, Melissa Allison, and I am so excited to be sitting here with Amber Rawley. And you might be wondering, who is she? Well, she is this amazing new friend that I have been able to build a relationship with through the Wynn Park City Women's Business Network. And she is the co-founder of Soup Awesome Life. And she has a wonderful project going on that I'm going to let her talk about more. But the thing about Amber is she is so empowering. She, just in the few conversations that we've had, and that's as I've learned what you have do in your business with your partner, it's liberating and clearing and helps people to get back on the path of their authentic life. So welcome, and thank you so much for agreeing to do this.
Thank you so much, Melissa, for having me. And it just warms my heart to hear you say what my whole life purpose is, to empower other people, is really just to help them find freedom. Freedom from whatever it is. And that is why me and my partner created Soup Awesome Life. It's all about living this super awesome life, the life that you were uniquely created for. And then our other project is Grow Community Center and Cafe, which is a community project that also encourages people to fall in love with life, to find their happy, to be free of things as simple as food allergies, all the way up to really heavy, you know, experiences and trauma, excuse me, that are keeping them from living their sole purpose, the fullness of their life. And that's kind of who I am, and my purpose in being here is to help people find their soul life and their soul purpose and their soul story.
Well, from the first time I met you, it was a year ago, actually, at one of the meetings, and just telling you what I was doing, and then you started talking, you almost started coaching me there on the spot. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to interview you for my podcast. So it's taken a bit, but you know, we were having a conversation last night, and it was amazing the information that you shared. One of the questions that I asked towards the end of our conversation was, you know, why is it that when somebody jumps in both feet, commits wholeheartedly, burns the ships to improve their life, whether it's through a program, through a book, or just through some choices that they're making in their life, why does it feel like life just is trying to shut you down?
It almost seems a little malice, doesn't it? But it is actually the opposite of malice. It's life becoming into agreement with your passion to move forward. And let's just say maybe life knows a little more than you know about what you really need to purge out of your life, what you need to heal from, those things that are keeping you back from that freedom. And it could be anything from just an unhealthy belief, an experience that you had, that you made a decision about yourself that makes you think that you are not good enough, or that you have, you know, you're not capable of fulfilling the things that are in your heart. And I think that when you make that decision to take a step, you get catapulted forward. And while it feels almost as if you just want to curl up in a ball and, you know, retreat from the world, it's actually catapulting you into this massive growth process. And sometimes you don't make that decision and life makes it for you, and a major life experience happens, whether it's a change in a relationship, a loss of a loved one, a change in a career, a major financial adjustment in your life, and those sometimes catapult the process as well. So it can be very, it could be a partnership, and sometimes it could just be, it's time for you to make some changes.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking this morning on the way here, about our conversation last night, and I, you know, as I shared with you this time last year, I thought,
I can't remember if it was numerology, astrology, whatever. I'm like, what does 2019 hold for me? And it's like, it's going to be tough. And I'm like, oh, no, it's not. So I do all these, not just one, but three different activities, programs that are supposed to just completely change your life. Mm-hmm. And I just, it felt like this morning I was thinking, it feels like, you know, a teenager when they're not focused, when they're not doing their homework, they're not, you know, getting their chores done and stuff like this. And so the parent has to just finally take away all the distractions and get you refocused. And it feels like this year that life finally said, okay, well, you've had fun doing it on your own. I'm going to help you out. You
know? Oh my gosh, it's so fun to hear you say that. So part of my passion and gift is just being able to allow people to see in the mirror what it is about. Like, it's a discovery process for them. It is not me telling them what's going on in their life or coaching them. That's why I'm more of a mentor. And one of the things that most of my clients that I work with discover is usually that it's them needing to take their hand off the wheel and them letting life. So we so want to help life fulfill our purpose. And the reality is that life is going to do it no matter what. Your decision, your control, your contribution is being willing to listen and follow life's timing and being willing to be surrendered to the different pieces of it. And sometimes life has you completely still and resting and not really having any engagement. And then sometimes life has you fully engaged. And the secret, I think, is being able to listen to those cues, because sometimes when we're letting life do things, it lets us sit in some really uncomfortable spaces, some really deep pain. And that's, again, going back to the very first thing we talked about, that's what life knows we need to get out of our way to run the next race. And so,
how did you get here? Like, what, were you born this way?
Life. I mean,
and life.
Yeah. And you know, it's funny because, you know, I'm 45, I think. I think that's right. Yeah, I'm 45. And it wasn't really until my early 40s where I kind of surrendered to my own story of life and realized that there were all these things in the different seasons of my life that developed who I am and how I can contribute to the world and how I can find my own peace and joy and freedom. And there were times along the way where I had pieces of it, but it all, like, the mosaic came together in my early 40s. And that was my timing. That was life and mind's agreement of when we were going to get to that point. It came from, you know, being kind of born into a life where I was a little bit wiser than most of the people around me, a little bit more mature, and then circumstances complemented kind of the way I was wired. And it's not a more than, it's just more gifted in this particular area. And we all have those gifts. So it's not, you know, something that separates us or put different people on pedestals. This is just what I'm, I guess, created to do. But it was everything from being a very independent child because of circumstances with single parents and, you know, great loving parents, but them figuring out their lives in the process and me just being super, super independent and super driven to having a lot of success in the business world and really building some confidence in that space. And then realizing at a very young age that wasn't my path and spending the last 12 years just kind of trial and erroring through what it was that brought me the greatest peace and the greatest joy and the greatest freedom. And in that process, life was developing skills in me so that I could be a business person, that I could be a mentor, that I could be a community person that has compassion for others and not just focused on my goals.
Well, are there like common threads that you see when people come to you for your services, misinterpretations of what's going on in their life or themselves or whatever it is, and how that evolves by the time that you're done?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the biggest common factor I see is that we oftentimes are a reflection of our culture cues. And America is so amazing in what it's able to accomplish in the mindset of performance and achievement and results oriented, and having certain levers in life that define success and what freedom and happiness look like. And most of the clients I work with are at a season in their life where they're starting to question what all that means to them. They want to find their own levers of success. They want to find who they are and what they are here to do and what they've been gifted and developed by life to do. And so there's just this general curiosity and awakening that ends up happening with people. And that's usually where I come into their life. And then we have a little time together and off they go. But I think that's the biggest thing. It's just a little bit of rewiring of what it is that life is trying to accomplish with us, in us, and through us. And I think when people are willing to ask those questions, they're really moving into a new space of freedom and contentment. And it's actually more results oriented than if they were to do it the more traditional path.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I often think, what would I tell myself? Like, if I could go back and whisper in my 18, 19, 20 year old ear, what would I tell her? Because I think, you know, I used to say that I'm this late, and I guess I was a late bloomer, you know, and an underdog. And so sometimes, because I'm 55, I still have a 14-year-old that I'm raising. I should be out there traveling and doing all, it's like there's all these should-bes based on what my peers are doing, but it's not who I am. It hasn't been my experience. So I think, what would I whisper? What would I tell myself? What advice? And I often think, you know, trust your gut, live your life according to what you want, you know, live on your terms. But I almost think that would defeat the purpose of everything. I almost think that it's important, you know, my path isn't what my peers was. And I'm almost kind of grateful, you know, because I'm, while a lot of people my age are retiring and hunkering down and they feel old and want to sit on the porch and watch the sunset, I feel like I'm just getting started. How do you feel about that? Do you think that this process is important, you know, or do you think we should develop a time machine so we can all go back and whisper in our 20-year-old ear?
No, the process is absolutely appointed. You're never late for your life. That's the part that
I love that.
And again, couple things that I help people with is not comparing themselves to other people's path, because that's someone else's path, and not having expectations of what their life should look like, because by this point, my friend should be this. By this point, I should have this much money in the bank. By this point, I should be fill in the blank, because that level of comparison is actually robbing you from being completely sold out to your own path. But you said something really interesting at the beginning of what you would tell your 20-year-old self. And I actually work with all generations, because it's really fun to work with people at different stages of their evolution. And what I would have told my 20-year-old self, what I would have needed to hear, and what a lot of the clients that I work with are missing in their life, is a simple little thing that I tell myself every morning when I wake up. And I'm not a big mantra person. I'm not a big, here's my checklist to get my head in this right space. It is very much more of an intuitive, organic, ooh, I'm feeling this. Okay, this is what I need to tell myself. Is I would tell myself, everything that I do today is right and nothing I do is wrong. Because if you're really truly trusting that your path and you're in this amazing, beautiful, you know, romance with life, then you can't do anything wrong. And that self-judgment that just completely just tears us apart. We just crumble inside. And by the time you get to your 40s and 50s, you've been doing it for so long, it actually starts to win. And then that's where you start feeling that you've been robbed of your life. And so it's been pretty transformative for the people I've worked with, even as simple. I mean, they're like, that's it? That's all you want me to do? I'm like, that's all I want you to do. You got plenty to do and you're going to figure this out. But if you could just realize that everything you do every day is right and nothing you do is wrong, it sounds too simple, but it's super powerful.
It really is. I got to interview this neuroscientist. Did I tell you about him?
Not yet, no.
Oh, well, let me tell you.
I love the brain guys, because they prove everything else that I've always intuitively felt. So
yes, and it's funny. Yeah, okay, that's a whole other conversation. Yeah. But his name is Bo Lotto. He's from the UK, and he wrote a book called Deviate, and he travels the world talking about perception. And he says, you can go back to an event that happened in your youth, and just by shifting the lens that you look at it through, it doesn't change the event, but it changes your experience of it, and it will heal you from that moment to now moving forward through the rest of your life. And so I got to experience that at the conference that I heard him. I had dinner with this woman who was there, and I don't remember why I told her about when I was 6 years old, growing up in Southern California, we were at the beach all the time, and I was fearless in the ocean. I'd swim past where I could touch. And this one night, I'm coming in, and this wave crashes down on me and puts me in this spin cycle, and I don't know which direction I'm going. I don't know what's happening. I'm scared. My lungs are starting to burn. I'm afraid that I'm going to die. And it finally spits me out, and I feel my lungs, and I think my family are going to come running to me because I almost just died. Mm-hmm. And they didn't even know.
Yeah.
And that I was just so hurt. And I turned around and looked at the ocean. I'm like, well, I better get back in, because mm-hmm. I had a new respect, mm-hmm. and I knew I wouldn't get in if I didn't then. And she said, why didn't you tell your family? I said, well, I'm number 5 of 6 kids. I felt like I didn't matter, you know? What's one, yeah. you know, out of 6? And they didn't, I just had this very intimate experience with life where I almost lost it. And she's like, I don't think that's what it was. And I started laughing. I'm like, okay, lady I just met, you tell me why I didn't tell my family. And she said, because you didn't need them. You kept your wits about you. You didn't breathe in the water. You got yourself to safety. And then you went back in. She's like, you were fine. And Amber, it was like from that point falling into place all the way to now and moving forward, the way I look at my life and my experience and everything. And it sounds crazy because it's like, but you lived all those years having that attitude. And it's like, no, it shifts. So it really is about the stories we're telling ourselves. And I got to ask him, if it's all a delusion, why aren't we making a good one? And he said, exactly, why aren't we? Because it's a choice. So it goes to what you're saying about what we're saying to ourselves, that there is no wrong, but it's this dance that we have with life. And so it's really empowering. So what tools do you use to help people realize that it's not a pipe dream? It really is this dialogue that you have with yourself.
Yeah, you know, it actually is more what's inside that person. So the people that I work with tend to have a sense that there's more in life. I like to say that they have either gone through some form of awakening, or they're waking up to realize that there's more to life than the things that they have either been told or believe that life wants from them. And I'm talking about, hey, this is what life looks like. You have this by this age, you have this much money in the bank, you can put your kids here, whatever, you know, this is what a mom does, this is what a dad does. Just all these labels that come from their personal experiences growing up. And again, they're not right or wrong, because that was their family culture. That was their path. So it's not so much that it's a right or wrong thing. It's more about helping them just look at it from a different perspective. And I think about, and it's going to come back to your ocean story. Growing up in Hawaii, I've had those moments. Yeah, and being very independent. And not, I wasn't like an independent, willful child. I just was very confident in myself, in the sense of being able to navigate life on my own early on. It doesn't mean that I didn't need the love of my parents, and that's a whole nother story. And I was confident in my skills, but I ended up having some wounds from that side of it that I ended up having to heal myself. But it was almost like, as you're telling me the story about your ocean experience, it was life giving you this little glimpse of a metaphor that said, I know in a lot of cultures, in a lot of family cultures, it is taught that you need your parents, you need your family. They are your support system. In some families, that is their truth. In other families, that isn't their truth. And you were already given a glimpse that you're not going to need them. That self-judgment that just completely just tears us apart. We just crumble inside. And by the time you get to your 40s and 50s, you've been doing it for so long, it actually starts to win. And then that's where you start feeling like you've been robbed of your life. Just light a little fire, fan the flame that's inside of them. And in that process of them discovering, they actually see the limitations. They actually see the things about themselves that they have been subconsciously playing in their head. And we talked a little bit last night about ego versus soul.
Yes.
And the, you know, the development of the ego from a very simple perspective is to protect and keep you safe. And more so on a physical side, but it also moves into emotional side in our childhood development. That first, you know, point of danger, you know, it's a simple one everyone uses. You touch a stove, your brain tells you, okay, don't touch that stove again. And that happens at a very early stage. But then when you have your first emotional trauma, which could be as simple as your parents telling you, no, you can't have a popsicle, right? And trauma is trauma, and that's a whole nother topic, but there is no, I think, measurement on the pain, on what pain is. Pain is relative to you. So someone who has been told by their parents no and desperately wants their parents' acceptance versus someone who's may have been through physical trauma or something like that, it's all relative to their soul and their ego. So we end up kind of, if we don't pay attention to what's happening in our life, our ego kind of gets to call the shots. And that's okay. You can go through life and have a pretty decent life with your ego calling the shots. But the real fun is when your soul, the very existence of your humanity and why you're here, when you allow them, or life starts to, you know, empower a soul in you to be the truth of who you are, ego gets a little nervous, feels a little threatened, and usually there's this little, could be a little of a showdown. And that's where, when we were talking about at the very beginning, those life, when life gets really nasty.
Yes.
Right? And then, I mean, nasty in all the good ways, but in, like, nasty in the good ways in the sense that the outcomes are going to be good, not so great when what you have to experience to go through it. That's when it gets a little messy. It's like when mom and dad are fighting, basically. And you know that eventually someone's going to have to make a decision. But soul usually wins if you're willing to surrender to the process. And then ego comes in alignment with soul's vision. And that's where that freedom, that's where you feel that propelling. And it's not just a switch. It can be levels of evolution of that. So, but just know that if you know, you're having a lot of that unrest, that mom and dad are fighting.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're here just to support them and letting it work, let it work out and that kind of thing. So that was a very long answer to your question.
No, no.
But I love trying to weave in some of the things you and I were so excited talking about last night at
the women's group. Oh my gosh. I know. It was such a good conversation. I'm like, why aren't I recording it now? I really.
Well, if it's truly authentic, it'll come back again.
Exactly.
And it is. So here we are.
Absolutely. And so, you know, part of our conversation last night was, you know, I shared with you that my goal is, speaking of ego, is to not have the shame, like people are like, oh, my ego got in the way, or oh, don't engage your ego, or whatever it is, ego, pride. And I feel like those are essential parts of us. And I loved what you said about that.
No ego shaming.
Yeah.
Not allowed.
Yeah.
Everything is right. Nothing is wrong. Right. So the ego, and this is a really interesting thing. And my guess is just maybe because of who you are, some of the people who are following and listening to you tend to probably be personalities and souls that are a little bit more empathic, a little bit more sensitive, and sensitive in all the good ways. And we actually, being an empath and sensitive person myself, we actually don't have enough ego a lot of the times, because we're so aware of everyone else around us and we want everyone else to be okay that we don't actually stand up for who we are. And it's not even a, it's not this, I got to stand up for myself, take a stand. It's not even done in the ego that you take a stand. It's more of just knowing your value and knowing that being sensitive in a world that sensitivity and intuitiveness isn't always been celebrated versus facts and science and the proof is in the results perspective. And what's really cool, and you see it happening everywhere, that you have the more sensitive, empathic, intuitive world and the science world, the facts and results oriented world, actually integrating the same way we're seeing ego and soul integrate. And that the two are almost kind of confirming each other. And if you're open-minded enough, you can say that everything can cohabitate together versus, you know, it being us versus them. But nevertheless, being an empathic person, you've just not given yourself enough credit most of the time. So you usually, when empathic people are kind of breaking through, it almost looks like they're getting kind of egotistical.
Yeah.
And that's good. Right. That's a really good thing. And then you start to retreat as an empath. I can't say I'm great. Oh my gosh, right. I spent my whole life trying to make sure people didn't think I was that person.
Yeah.
And the very nature of an empath, if you're asking yourself if you're being egotistical, then you are not egotistical. Right.
Or if you're asking yourself, are you a narcissist?
You're a narcissist, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And so, and again, I mean, this isn't about one group being better than the other. It's more about just understanding how you're wired, mm-hmm. and what it is that you need in this world to thrive and to function and to, you know, be a light not only to yourself, most importantly, but to others.
So. Well, you know, it's kind of like the ecosystem of humans. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like when they took the wolves away from the parks, you know, what happened? The wolves, yeah. and coyotes. And
yeah.
It's like it we need all of these different personalities, all of these types. We're all important. We serve different purposes. We make different things happen in the world. And so it's like, I love what you said. It goes back to not comparing yourself, mm-hmm. to other people and just doing your dance with life.
Absolutely.
So how do you help people get there? Like, what are some tips you can give the listeners so that...
Yeah, one more thought on that, on what you were just saying, because it's something that is always been just part of who I am at my soul growing up in Hawaii, is this concept, and I hate putting labels on things because I feel like sometimes it can trigger somebody if they don't understand it, but hey, we all need to be triggered sometimes.
Right.
So if there's something we need, if you're being triggered, then I'm here to help you through it. We all get triggered. We're not immune to that, no matter, yeah. who you are. But this concept of social inclusion, which being here in Park City, there's actually an initiative from local government, nonprofits, you know, influencers in the community of, could we create a community where we all could interact together? We're working on a project where we're making it around food in a cafe, but also providing community resources to the different groups. But rather than, and they're called communities now, so a community might be seniors, or a community may be the LGBT community. And it's my understanding that this is a respectful way to talk about a group, not that they're separate, but that's their community that they can associate with. And how do we bring everyone together instead of sending everyone to their separate groups? Like, you go work, this is where you go when you're in this community. That's great. It's good to have a place to connect with like-minded people. But what we're missing is bringing people back together and integrating. And it just, when you said human ecosystem, I just was like, yeah. That's it. It's exactly what it is. And in each community, you're going to have a scenario where, okay, the wolves have been removed. Okay, so that means this factor is coming up. So what do we need to do to wrap our arms around each other in the community to make it more balanced?
Right.
And in every community, the groups that need help can be different. And that's the part I want people to be aware of too, and not to put people in categories, in boxes. So sorry, I just had to go there. But the question you asked me were what tips and resources, yeah. to tell people.
And then I want to touch on the cafe too.
Okay, perfect. You know, I think I've always empowered people to find what works for them, because I'm not a big meditator. I have quiet time. A lot of us have overstimulated nervous systems, and how we calm our nervous system is very different for each of us. Some people, it's listening to calming music. Some people, it's going for walks. And the very baseline, and when I start working with people, is helping them focus on their nervous system. Because usually by the time they're raising their hand saying, I need an outside support system or outside support, it's because they cannot manage it on their own, because their nervous system is what I call max capacity. So the first thing I have them do is explore things that are going to make them feel good at the very basic level. So are you eating food that makes you feel good, or are you eating food that makes you anxious? Are you getting enough sleep? My secret superpower, if I tell anyone to do anything, I'm like, stop the checklist that you have to do every day, sleep more. That is the number one thing I recommend to people. And for some people, sleeping is hard. So sleeping more is 10 minutes a day, but sleeping, like, we were designed as humans to sleep, you know, it's part of our like actual human cycle of a 24-hour period. So the healing that happens physically when you sleep, the calming of the nervous system when you sleep, the restoration when you sleep, and our culture is not very sleep friendly. It's actually it's more cool to brag about what you can do with less sleep. Mm-hmm. And so I try to 180 that for people. But it's listening. So the other thing I ask myself when I wake up in the morning, and it's not every morning, sometimes I kind of just know exactly where I'm at, but I'll wake up some mornings and I'm like, I'm not very motivated today. No circumstances in my life has changed. It's just the energy that's going through my body and where my emotions are that day. And I'll just say, what do I need today? And I will find time to make that work. Do I need a walk? Do I need a little extra sleep? Do I need a little more quiet time? Do I need time with my business partner or my partner? So being able to do that on a regular basis for yourself sets the pace for you to be really healthy physically, nurture the nervous system, and then you can start layering on the real personal growth stuff.
Right. I love that. It's just really stripping it down and getting to the basics of your foundation.
Healing is not complicated. We have overcomplicated it. And that's why I like to get back to the basics and why I'm like, you have one thing to do after a session with me, because really that one thing should be enough. And most of the time when people are healing, they don't really need, like, there are energetic transactions that are happening in the process of their healing that they don't actually need to do anything to help it. Usually it's just calming the mind or like anxious energy in the body just so that they feel better. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of happening behind the scenes because, again, life is part of this, helping you out. We really don't have a lot to do, and that's a big release for us to realize there isn't a whole lot for us to do than just participate and take one more step.
Yeah. You know, I think that that's going back to the beginning of our conversation, you know, when life slams you, it's like there's a liberation in going through that difficulty, that struggle. We start thinking that we need to be a certain type of person, you know, that we have to show up a certain way. And sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes that takes us away from our authentic self, defeats the whole purpose. But
you're in that painful place for a reason. So much, even a lot in like mindfulness and healing modalities, we instantly, I need to go get this work done, or I need to go do that, because we don't want to feel the pain, whether it's emotional or actual physical pain, because so much of our emotional pain is stored in our cellular body. And so we try to find something to release and relieve the pain. And everyone's pain threshold is different. So if you need to do that for your sanity, do it. But there is going to come a time where you're not going to need to do it, and you're just going to be sitting with whatever it is. And you'll be okay. And you'll wish that, you'll just wish that pain away so badly. But being able to just kind of surrender to, and I keep using that word, in the sense of, you know what? I think I can do it this time without an external healing modality. And that's why I'm so pro mentorship versus coaching. And, you know, we meet every week or whatever, because it really is about empowering people to stand on their own two feet, but not having to do it alone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It reminds me of labor.
Yeah.
Of a birth. Because when you... I have five babies, so I've had lots of practice.
A little bit of practice. I have zero, so I'm going to take your word for it. You're going to teach me about this.
Yes. So the first four babies I had naturally, and that includes my second son, who was 11 pounds, 3 ounces,
born
face up. Oh. It was like, and he didn't even make the, you know, due date. He wasn't overdue. He was like, oh my gosh. So all of them natural. And there is this, first when you're in labor, it's like your world shrinks down to just the first couple of feet around you when you're in active labor, and you can't focus on anything else. It is all about what is happening. So it's this life, this creation, you know, it's like you are one with the universe in that moment, and in making that happen. And when you've gone through that process, I remember I always felt I would rather deliver my babies than go through the 9 months of pregnancy. That was never easy for me. But the actual labor and delivery was magnificent. And then, you know, for the next few days, and I've spoken to other women who felt the same way. You feel like the sexiest, most beautiful goddess. Mm-hmm. You feel like, I would say, I feel like Wonder Woman. It's like, why can't I have sex for 6 weeks? Because I want it now, you know, because I've never felt so yummy.
Because this is about you feeling this good without anyone else in your life.
That's
right? That self-empowered flow, if you will.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's wonderful. And then my last baby, I was passing a kidney stone at the same time labor. But I caved. I felt so disappointed in myself. But I'm like, give me that epidural. Yeah. I can't do it. And my experience, because she was born before the epidural even took effect, but just having that epidural and not that pain anymore, don't experience that high afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, and your transition, it's almost as if you are just this witness. Mm-hmm. You're not part of the process.
Yeah.
And so when you talk about life and everything and everything that you just said, it made me think about when we are in it, when we are one in that moment, it is so empowering. And yes, it's painful, but it is liberating. It's delicious. It is, I can't think of a more powerful place to be than in your own life, in that moment, fully participating and engaged.
Yeah.
Because then you birth this wonderful experience, this wonderful path for yourself.
That is such a cool metaphor. No, it really is, because that's basically what I try to explain to
people. You're a midwife.
I am a midwife, yes. And you know, and here, going back to, you know, not being judgmental of your path, for some people, they need to have that pain taken away. But so then, so the point is not, oh, you know, always do natural birth. But the point is that you need to know what your path is. And I really empower and support people when they're making a lot of these transitions. It's like, if you're really feeling pushed, just do what you need to do to help you. And, you know, if some days you just need a glass of wine because you can't get to that calm on your own, there's no judgment in that, you know. And you know, my mom was a psychosocial nurse practitioner, so she was a counselor with the ability to prescribe medication to people. And sometimes when people are in an acute circumstance with their mental health, they need the medication to even be able to start doing the work, because the imbalance is so intense in their body. So everyone's journey is different.
Yeah.
But you know, it's interesting, as you're telling me the story about the labor and like this baby's coming, it goes full circle to what we said at the beginning about when life has something for you, it's coming. Like, there is no stopping that. There is no, like, I changed my mind, I want to go back.
Yes.
When
oh, my gosh.
The train has left the station and that baby's coming, and somewhere along the way you agreed to have that baby, whether you knew it or not, it's like, and here it is. And, it, you know, we were talking last night, I was talking with Deb Kirby about the art of intentions. And I'm like, sometimes you set an intention and you agree, I will do whatever it takes to fill in the blank, this to fulfill this part of my life. And it's almost like, okay, you didn't really know what you agreed to, but it's just like when you got pregnant for your first time, you didn't realize what was going to happen.
No.
I mean, but the train's left the station, and that is so much a metaphor for your soul's evolution and really fulfilling what is going to bring you just overwhelming joy and contentment. And that euphoric feeling that you live in that moment, that can become part of your daily life.
Yeah.
And you'll find the more you kind of allow life and your soul purpose to guide you, the more you live in that space on a regular basis. And you want to talk about, you know, what is it, the law of attraction? You want to talk about the law of attraction when you're in that space. Things in your life are drawn to you, and you actually don't live in that battleground anymore. The battleground, the war, if you will, with all the little battles that you're dealing with to get to that point, that becomes more of an exception, and this euphoric space that you live in becomes more of your rule and more your everyday life. And then you just, you know, you keep getting your edge pushed, you know, your comfort zone just keeps getting pushed out, but you have the ability, and you're taking care of your nervous system, so you have the ability to navigate through it. And maybe you've come up with a couple of little things in your life that help you deal with an increase of, you know, energy in your body that is maybe more anxietal or sad or whatever. And then you really kind of, that's where the fun begins. And that's my favorite part of helping people, is getting into that place.
Yeah.
And it's not me getting them, actually. It's like, it's their timing.
Right.
So I just support them in them getting to that place.
Yeah, that's wonderful. So tell me, the cafe, how did you get there? What is the purpose of it? What's the mission?
I love it. So the mission is connecting. And everything that we're seeing in our society today is, people are saying, I want to be connected. But the levels of pain that people have had are causing people to retreat. And we see it in the increase in mental health diagnoses. The number one factor in helping people live in a mentally positive or healthier state is connectedness. But you get to a point in your life where you just maybe had so many perceived failures, or that voice in your life is winning, and whether it mentally, destabilizes you or changes the chemical balance in your body to the point where, it's chemically measurable, you start to withdraw and isolate. And so we believe that if we create a place that people come together, and the food is the anchor, but the focus is not the food. The food is just the reason why people come in. And I'll kind of come back to why the food became the factor. That when people reach that acute phase, if they already have a connectedness within the community, then they know where to reach out for support. And the community center side of it and the cafe are designed to support people in like that acute, oh my gosh, my life just blew up. But also to help people really do what I've been talking about in this whole conversation is, what do I need to do in my daily life in like the chronic pain that I deal with? Yeah. What do I need to do in my daily life that's going to make me feel better? And you see everything as simple as, people starting to discover that there are certain foods that inflame their system. And so with food allergies that, may trigger some autoimmune system. And you just kind of go through life going, oh, I'm getting older. This is just how I'm going to feel. I'm just, going to be more tired or whatever. And in my own personal journey, I've discovered you can actually feel a lot better if you're aware of some of the things that are kind of weighing on your body and weighing on your heart. So the same way I do the work with people individually, we're creating a space where people can, as simple as grab coffee with each other and be in a really healthy, positive space, to getting really healthy anti-inflammatory food that's going to help them with, calm their body system, to connecting with youth. So we ran a youth program back in Colorado where kids came after school, and it was a safe space for them to come and be themselves in a peer environment, but with adults there to support them and empower healthy behaviors individually. It was kind of like having an auntie and an uncle that they can talk to while mom and dad were still at work. And then connecting, we've got this incredible senior community in Park City who is just a wealth of life experience, and connecting them with our youth for these two-way conversations around youth teaching them how to use their phones so they can communicate with their grandkids, to them sharing some of their life experiences. And again, the focus is, people come in there for food. We're going to have a third wave coffee bar, a juice bar, but they leave maybe knowing that there's more in this community to offer them. So that's the real high level version of it. Where it was birthed from was from this concept of feeling like a person in a community back in Colorado. It was a middle to upper class community, kind of some of the similar demographics to Park City. And I was going through, my husband and I at the time were going through a very hard financial time. And there's this thing called suburban poverty, where there's a lot of people, whether it was a loss of a job or a lot of times divorces put families into severe financial hardships because there's two families and everything's, cut down the middle, and you still got to run two households on the same income, maybe even less, because now you need caretaker hours and all these things. And Melissa's nodding because she knows what I'm talking about. And it can, your life can go from being completely stable to completely destabilizing with some of these dynamics, and yet no one around you knows that it's happening. And in experiencing that level of suburban poverty that led to homelessness for my husband and I at the time, there was something inside of me and goes, we were missing something as a community, and it wasn't safe for me to reach out. There were resources available, but they were crisis resources. They were not so much social, how do I feel like I'm going to be okay from a social mental level when you're going through that? And people going, you know what, it's okay to be you with this status in life, yeah, and to need help.
Yeah. And I know you've talked about that in some of your previous previous episodes. So I just remember that happening. And this was right around the time of the recession. So there was a lot of us going through it. I mean, this was 2006, 2007, 2008, and everything was changing. But there wasn't an infrastructure that was done with dignity and, quite honestly, by the community. This wasn't, you know, I wasn't necessarily going to go for government support at that time. I probably wouldn't have even qualified, but that's not the point. It was more about, hey, as a community, we really should be taking care of each other. And that's where the power is going to be. And it's good to have support systems from resources in the government, but ultimately, we're going to change the community by being compassionate people. So that just stuck in my head, and I just knew that someday a piece would come together. I ended up years later being diagnosed with 7 major food allergies. My world was turned upside down. I had to learn how to cook for myself, everything from scratch, because nothing, I mean, between soy, gluten, and egg, and dairy, there was always one of those in a thing that I bought from the store. So I had to learn to cook from scratch. I was cooking all the time. My husband at the time was diabetic and a pilot, and he needed to eat super healthy, but our diets were opposite. So I had to come up with a way to cook healthy, and in a cooking system that I created that is actually at the core of what the cafe model is at Grow. You solve a problem when you really need to, and it actually was kind of divinely solved for me, if you will. Life got involved and showed me a way to do it, and it became a foundation not only for what I do with Soup Possum Life, but in the cafe space, where we can create really affordable food that's healthy, that's really tasty, it's functional for our bodies and our brains, and anybody, no matter what their cooking skill set, can do it. So that's one of the big things that the cafe model is going to do, is we're going to do cooking classes. And we also can employ people with a variety of skill sets. So we're looking at employing the neurodiverse community, which is everyone from a brain trauma to someone who is born with some brain adjustments, to people who are coming out of a major mental health diagnosis and reentering society and trying to find their journey, because you don't need a specialty skill set to work in the cafe. So there's that employment side. And yeah, it's just like when you asked me at the beginning, how did you end up here? And I'm like, it was just the circumstances of my life all coming together. And it was the cafe, and then it was like, no, the cafe and the community, the two go together. One without the other is almost not even worth doing at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. I can't wait to see it and experience it. And
me too. You know. The day those doors open, which we're hoping is going to be, it's been accelerated. In part, we actually relocated it from Colorado to Park City. A leader in the community asked us to bring it out, and we said yes. And this is the right community to get it up and running, because it's a community that really cares, and it really wants to make everyone feel included in the community. It does not want anyone to be alone when they're ready to be connected.
When I started off this year, I thought, I'm not going to tell anybody about the refinement course. I'm not going to tell anybody about my life imploding, you know, but it's, as I have shared, as I've been vulnerable and transparent with other people, so many other people in this community that is affluent, highly educated, and all of these other things, the perception from the outside looking in is that, oh, they've got all their stuff together. They're
right.
All, you know, whatever, yeah. You know, no hardships there. But it's filled with hardship and tenacity and grit and perseverance.
Yeah.
And the wonderful thing is the vulnerability on their part to share their story and to not perpetuate that facade of, oh yeah, I have it all together.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, my life's a mess too.
Yeah.
You know, let's have coffee.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, and we've seen it. Gosh, we've seen it from the monthly talks we see at the Women's Inspired Network, Wynn Park City. And it's one of the things I love about this community, and that there's a women's group who's willing to just bear, you know, bear as much as they're ready to bear. And it's not even a matter of, because then you can get into the comparison, well, her story is more, you know, she's been through more than me or whatever. And it's like, no, it's just, it's just knowing that we're all going to experience life.
Yeah.
And it's all in how we greet it. Do we greet it with open arms?
Yeah.
Or do we turn our back on it? And even if we turn our back on it, it's okay because life is patient and it will come back.
That's right.
Yeah. So turn your back all you want. And, I would say if you want to get through it sooner, just open your arms up a little wider.
Oh, my gosh. What an exciting, wonderful life. And it's all based on you trust. You know, one of the things you said last night that impressed me was that, because I was asking you, what's your favorite book list, you know? Because I am all about self-improvement books, and it's like I listen to them, read them, and share what your response was.
Yeah.
Because that was amazing.
I love helping people connect with their own voice. And as empathic and sensitive people, we always think everyone else's ideas are better than ours and the things that they've discovered and their teachings. And I, just coming up through the leadership space and corporate and doing a lot of leadership training, I always found that after I left one of those events or, listened to an intense podcast or something, I always felt drained instead of inspired. And I'd have my lists, and then, I wake up the next day and I didn't do any of the things that the leaders told me to do, and then I would fail. And you see where that cycle of self-judgment continues. No matter what you do, you're setting yourself up to fail. And so I just realized, just kind of intuitively, like, you know what? I think I'm going to start listening to my own voice. There is enough. I have enough foundation to understand kind of what it takes to be a compassionate leader. And ultimately, I'm just like, okay, so what if I just loved people? Because that's true leadership is love. And that's true humanity. And so I'm like, I'm just going to love people. And I'm not even going to be like, today I'm going to get up and tell people, three people, how beautiful they are. No, I mean, right. I just made a choice in who I am to let my love come out. And sure, I'd go through a day where someone would irritate me and I would, you know, not say it to them, but I mean, I would do my thing. So this isn't about like, I just woke up one day and I was this loving soul. It's more of, I just decided, I'm like, you know, what does love look like? And love is, you know, respecting where people are, accepting yourself, most importantly, loving yourself, but then just loving other people and letting them be who they are. And when someone triggers you, just going, that's really interesting. You know, it's not really about them. This is more about me. And what do I need to do to love this part of myself? And so the more I started to focus on love and listening to my voice is actually where I started to draw the strength and the confidence in who I was. And I found external things were not triggering me anymore. My big, elephant in the room is dealing with rejection. So I would always find reasons to see how I was rejected out in the world or situations or social engagements, networking events, and being more of an introvert. You know, those were always really hard for me. And so, but they were my growth process. And I realized once I just started loving myself and kind of just knowing that my voice is the only voice I need to hear. And when I need another voice in my life, it comes in, at the right time. Or sometimes I seek it out. And this is not to say, and there are other people who really like information. So you have to find out what works for you. Yeah. But I think, as part of this whole like success leadership movement, it's been self-growth movement, is that we've almost made self-growth and personal growth work. Mm-hmm. And now it doesn't have the organic momentum that it needs.
Yeah.
Because we're still, everything's going to be someone else's experience.
Yeah.
And so if you can't filter out their experience versus yours, even reading their book or even listening to me, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's why it's so important to help people find their voice and their experience. So,
well, I guess the bottom line here is to trust your own path.
Yeah.
Not compare yourself to other people, to run your own race, and to allow yourself to dance with life, to play and be organic.
Mm-hmm. And nothing you do is right and everything you do is wrong. So if you want to read 100 books, go for it.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you read the book? Does it inspire you? So it's constantly going, how does this make me, how do I feel?
Yeah.
And like when you're around people, like you've mentioned, you know, releasing groups of friends and as you evolve, and it's like, how does that make you feel? Okay. And sometimes you choose to be around them because that's the environment that you need to be in, and there's a growth opportunity. So it's not just to live in a bubble around nothing but positive people who are going forward, because that's not reality. And sometimes you need to be the light in that situation. But it's just listening to that inner voice of, you know, I think this is healthy for me. Kind of uncomfortable. That person really triggers me. But you know what? They're going to help me overcome what this is that triggers me.
Yeah.
And thank you, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's always about trusting your own path and being okay with discovering that. And it may take your whole life, but you will discover it.
Yeah.
Every day you discover more about yourself if you're willing to listen.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been wonderful. I'm so glad that we did this.
Me too.
I have one last question
yes.
for you. What did you used to believe was forbidden in your life that now you enjoy?
Oh, I think I've always felt that the full expression of myself was forbidden. And that, again, it goes back to if people really knew who I was, they'll reject me. And so I had to play by culture's rules. And I got really good at, you know, I developed all these different areas of my life the way that life, you know, culture says, you know, this is how you operate in the business world. And if you have this, and then this is how you are as a partner and all that stuff. And I never really allowed myself to be myself because I was afraid that people close to me would reject me, or the person I needed to accept me would reject me. And the reality was that I was just rejecting myself the whole time. And we talked about that rejection, right? When
yes.
we're finding flaws in others is actually the flaw that we're seeking in ourselves or seeing in ourselves. So, you know, the F for me is the full expression of myself. And that's why it's so important for me to support people in finding their full expression, because it's 100% uniquely authentic to them.
That's amazing. I love that. Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Loving the F. I'm Melissa Allison, and I hope you'll join me again next week.